The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno. A little later on, Jurgen Klinsmann and Gab Marcotti will be here to reflect on another bad day at the office for Pirlo. We'll start, though, in the Premier League. Chelsea losing their first game under Thomas Tuchel. And boy, did they do it in style.
Yep.
5-2 at home against West Brom, which opens the door, by the way, for the chasing pack looking for a place in the Champions League next season. Good day for Liverpool, beating Arsenal by 3-0 away from home. Meanwhile, Manchester City win again, beating Leicester City by 2-0. Let's welcome in, shall we, Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. Craig, how did this happen?
I don't know, because Stevie and I were talking about it yesterday on his show, and he was despondent at the fact that Liverpool, even if they got a victory against Arsenal, which they did, was probably going to come off the back of a resounding victory at Stamford Bridge against a West Brom side that have been pretty pathetic for most of the season. But, you know, obviously the sending off changed it. But when you go down to 10 men, it's not like you're going down to 10 men against, you know, Man City or one of the best teams in the Premier League. They should still have been able to cope comfortably. I mean, he took Ziyech off, he brought Christensen on. So defensively, they should have still been able to cope with who they were playing against. But let's be honest, this Chelsea side completely folded under the pressure. And listen, Silva absolutely deserved to go, there's no doubt about that. And some of the goals West Brom scored were fantastic. But this was implosion from Chelsea. Tuchel's first defeat. And he has to take responsibility for it as well.
Stevie, we've talked about Tuchel, who hasn't exactly come in and got them playing beautiful, attractive football, but they've been brilliantly solid at the back. How did that all go so wrong today? Is it just as simple as saying because of the sending off?
I think it is, yeah. Listen, when you're 2-1 down at home and you're down to 10 men and you're trying to chase the game, then it's absolutely perfect for a side like West Brom. You know, they have got pace going forward. The one thing they might not normally have is quality in the final third. They've been struggling to score goals. But I tell you what, they took advantage of every single situation. And really, it is pretty simple. It's got nothing to do with the international break because, listen, Jorginho and Silva, who were the main culprits here, they weren't away. West Brom had as many players away as Chelsea did. So this has got nothing to do with anything other than bad decision making from Silva. The 10 men having to chase the game, that's what can happen. And it can even happen against a team like West Brom.
Honeymoon well and truly over for Tommy Tuchel, Craig.
Yeah, because as we know, Liverpool are on their heels and they're not the only team. And look, it was pretty much a shambles from that sending off onwards. We had Timo Werner's performance again. You know, it's not just the and I know he set up one of the goals, but it's not just the lack of confidence in front of goal. It's the way that he gets shoved off the ball. And then we had the Pulisic incident coming back out after half time, having a warm up and getting a tight hamstring in the warm up. But initially, Twitterati thought that Tuchel had taken him off, and we had to sit and listen to all this crying again from Americans about Tommy Tuchel hates us. Why does he take Christian Pulisic's job? What does this mean for the US men's national team? Then we found out he got injured, hence the confusion. And then, oh, what does his injuries mean for the US men's national team? So we got to live through all that again. And at the end of the day, Christian Pulisic at the moment, and nothing against the lad, but I think he'd get an injury going to put the kettle on. And that's the kind of way his career is going at the moment. And listen, I've been through that. A lot of us have been through it. But he's injury prone. And he's going to have to solve that. Tuchel has plenty of other options. Obviously, Pulisic's got the goal from the free kick. That was one minor headache for Tommy Tuchel. But the major headache is now that his task is to get this side in the top four. That would have been his remit from Abramovich coming in. It's still on track, but it's going to be a lot more difficult now after that shambolic performance.
And it does give, as I mentioned, those hope who are chasing that place in the Champions League, Stevie, and in particular, your boys, 3-0 away against Arsenal. Well, you completely wrote them off before, said no way they're going to finish in the Champions League. Is your mind starting to change now?
Well, after today's results, not just Liverpool's, but obviously Chelsea's, yes. And there's actually one big reason, and his name's Diogo Jota. You know, the famous front three, as they've been called, well, it's time to split them up, because it should be Jota and two others. Up until he came on, yes, Liverpool were the better side. Yes, they passed it around. They did all the things we know they can do, but they were so blunt going forward. And I'm sitting thinking after an hour, this has got 0-0 written all over it, because Arsenal certainly weren't going to get anywhere near the goals, never mind get a shot. And Liverpool looked as though they didn't know where the goals were until Jota comes on, then all of a sudden, going forward, they look dangerous and they end up with three goals. So I'm certainly a lot more optimistic now after today. And a lot of that has got to do with Jota. I mean, the guy is absolutely a goal machine, as they're calling him right now. So, yeah, it has to be him and two others.
Yeah, he made a huge difference, Craig, obviously.
Yeah, and so did Arsenal. I mean, out of all the top teams, I mean, how many times have we seen this club in recent years with the most softest of underbellies when called upon? They didn't even make a tackle hardly in the second half. They were chasing shadows. And look, the other side of it from Liverpool is, I think, whilst not the greatest partnership, we know that, moving Fabinho into the midfield has meant that Kabak and Phillips, I believe it's now four clean sheets. That's at least, as a partnership, that's at least a starting point from where they were. And as I say, getting Fabinho back in the middle of the park. But if you look at Jota's performances for Portugal as well as Liverpool since the injury, that's four-headed goals in the games that he's played. I mean, for a guy it's not physically that big, the timing of his runs into the box and his ability to score from with headed goals as well as the goals he scored before his injuries is quite incredible. And so they're going to give themselves a chance, which is what we talked about on yesterday's show. But Arsenal, Arteta, at what point does he come under the scrutiny that a lot of other managers are coming under, that Lampard came under, that Lampard lost his job, and there are others? At some point, and it will probably be the end of the season, when they sign players, how do they start next year? That's a big concern for him. I know he was missing Saka, he was missing Smith Rowe. These are youngsters. There was still enough in that field to at least... I mean, they were at home today. They were at home. Think about that first... Don't forget the second half with the three goals. Think about the first half even. With all Liverpool's possession, Arsenal were at home, six men behind the ball defending for almost all of that first half. Not acceptable.
Craig, just going to your question I put to Stevie as well. We're on Liverpool in the top four as it stands. They're just 2 points off Chelsea. Yeah. Remaining games, Villa, Leeds, Newcastle, Manchester United, Southampton, West Brom, Burnley, Crystal Palace. It's not bad, is it?
No, and I think if I was in the dressing room, and I'm sure Klopp and his coaches are, I'd be saying, I don't know. Listen, I don't know how the modern guys work. I know we used to look at the schedule coming up, and you've just said it. I presume they still do, or maybe they just give it the old one game at a time routine, but they'll know they have an opportunity. And Klopp will be saying to his players, look, let's finish the season strongly. It's been a horrendous season for injuries, particularly at the back. Let's get in that top four. Champions League football next year. Don't want the Europa League. Let's wipe ourselves down and go again. And I think that would be the mindset in that Liverpool dressing room, is that we can win every game between now and the end of the season, and we can get in that top four. And then next year, we just go again. And I think that's a good way to try and finish the season on a positive note. They're still in the Champions League as well. They've got players coming back from injury. So they could finish the season with some sort of positive news, from where they were for last chunks of this season, would be a decent season.
Stevie?
Don't look at the fixture list. It's absolutely the worst thing you do. Liverpool shouldn't be looking at no fixture list. All they should be looking at is who do we play next and how do we go about it. Listen, three, four weeks ago, this is a team that lost the sixth home game against teams like West Brom and Newcastle. So all of a sudden, we're putting a fixture list up going, oh, I can beat them. Listen, that's not where Liverpool are right now. They've got a fantastic win today. Yes, they got a great result from West Brom beating Chelsea. But if you're Liverpool, you're looking at the next fixture, not two and three and four and five down the line. How do we win the next game? How do we prepare? And how do we perform to win a game, regardless of the opposition?
That's the modern man in Stevie coming out. Sports psychologist, one game at a time.
Hey, there's a lot of things have changed over the years, but there's one thing that has never changed and should never change, and that is looking way down the line. It's all about the next game.
Let's talk about the next game, Stevie. Real Madrid. How does this performance against Arsenal make you feel going into this game? Liverpool favourites.
Well, I think when you score goals, that's the thing that gives you confidence, no question. And it's something Liverpool haven't been doing a lot of recently, is scoring goals. They've certainly had possession. I expect them to have possession against Real Madrid. As I've been talking about, now that you've got somebody like Jota who's ready to start, you get him in that starting 11, and that's an extra reason why you will beat Real Madrid or anybody else you're playing against. You know, it really is a toss of a coin. Both of these sides are capable of destroying their opposition, but both of them are capable of imploding as well. And so that's why it's tough to call. But listen, if you've got a guy like Jota and he's scoring goals, you get him on the field and then you try and get him supply. And if you do, that should hopefully make you favourite.
Meanwhile, Manchester City with a 2-0 victory over Leicester. Craig, how different this performance was compared when these two teams met earlier on in the season?
Yeah, and a little note to that performance and some of the early season performances was the team selection. Great goal from Mendy, but, you know, selecting two holding midfielders in Rodri and Fernandinho said, look, we understand that with Leicester's shape, with three at the back and Iheanacho and Vardy up front, we understand they're going to be a threat and they're going to have long times without the ball, and we have to be aware of that. And City were very, very professional. I mean, you know, there was periods in the first half Leicester had a great defensive shape, but eventually, you know, City wore them down, and he was able to leave on the bench Gundogan, who's been brilliant, Phil Foden, Raheem Sterling, John Stones going to rest again after his mistake for England, but he's played a lot. So it was the perfect performance. Leicester weren't great, but he at least admitted Guardiola and his team selection. And maybe he wouldn't have done that a year ago. He'd have said, we don't care about Leicester. We just go and play our game. He's sort of changed his mindset in the way he enters these games nowadays. He thinks a little bit more about the opposition, about his team selection to try and stop them, but not taking too much away from City going forward. And I thought it was a very, very professional performance.
Stevie?
Yeah, just to go on to what Craig was saying, though, there's absolutely no doubt that his mindset as far as defending's concerned has completely changed. That was a show of it today with the two defensive midfielders, as Craig said, and what's going on defensively with the back four. So, yeah, I mean, he's absolutely... If it was possible to develop from Barcelona and Bayern to Man City of a couple of years ago, then he's done that. He's actually taken another step forward because he's realised that not to win championships, but to do it continuously, you have to be able to defend. So kudos to him.
Great stuff, guys. As always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, the Premier League matches continue over the next 48 hours. Four for you on Sunday, including Manchester United against Brighton. Then Monday sees Everton take on Palace and it's Wolves against West Ham.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It was pretty much the perfect Saturday for Inter Milan. They beat Bologna by 1-0. Romelu Lukaku scored the difference between the two the sides. But some 8 points clear at the top of the table with a game in hand. The reason they're 8 points clear, Milan could only manage a draw home against Sampdoria. Meanwhile, Juventus could only draw 2-2 against Torino. Meaning Italy's all about now that fight for a Champions League spot. You've got four teams battling for those three places. Well, for more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Gab Marcotti and Jürgen Klinsmann. Gab, I want to start with you. There are rumours in Italy that if Pirlo had a bad week, he'd be gone. This is not a good start to the week.
No, and of course they have that huge game in midweek against Napoli, who they're competing with directly, really, for a place in the top four. I think to some degree there's some mitigating circumstance. Obviously, McKennie and Archer didn't play today because Pirlo punished them for violating COVID rules, hosting a party. They also facing some criminal issues. They had to pay a fine as well. He's got a big call to make whether to bring them back. Look, this was a terrible performance, and it could have been worse. So we didn't see in those highlights there. De Ligt on Belotti. Torino had a strong claim for a penalty.
Yeah, this is real for Juventus. We're talking about a team who are defending champions, won all those championships on the bounce, may not qualify for the Champions League.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that would obviously be disastrous also because, their finances hit very, very hard by COVID, like many other clubs, but even more so because in their case, Juve makes so much money off of their stadium. And also, of course, the Champions League elimination coming so early in the round of 16, not something that they had budgeted for. There's even suggestions that some outlets reporting that players may be asked to defer wages. So it is a really, really tough spot, and I think it's going to be a huge test for Pirlo, not just in midweek, but in the coming weeks. And probably also a test for Juve's commitment to the new direction that supposedly they're going in and that Pirlo was charged with bringing in.
Allegri doesn't have a job, Gab. Why don't they just bring him back? He'll get him in top four. Bish, bash, bosh. Away we go.
Look, I go back to this, and I may be in the minority, but they made this change for a reason. You can count on zero fingers the number of teams that are still in the number of Serie A teams that are still in the Champions League. And part of the belief is that what works, what won Juve titles in Italy, whether this is right or wrong, isn't going to work in Europe. That you have to play younger players, you have to press higher, you have to play a different brand of attacking football where you demand the ball and you impose yourself on the opposition and blah, blah, blah. Allegri wasn't doing that, wasn't able to do that, in their opinion. Maurizio Sarri came in acting like he was going to do that and then went back to the tried and tested of results-driven football. They're committed to going in a different direction, and that's why they brought Pirlo in. Is Pirlo the right man to take them there? I don't know. It may end up being somebody else, but they say quite firmly, and I think they're probably correct, that this is the direction of travel. This is the way that they have to go.
Jürgen, is this the way they have to go?
Oh, because there is no growth without pain. I mean, Italian football in a certain way is behind. And I mean, it's not only what Andrea Pirlo is trying to do, but I think I remember years ago, Antonio Conte said it as well, you know, that they are not catching up with the tempo of the game that is played in the Premier League or at some points in Spain or in Germany. And obviously this campaign and the European competitions, it all proves it. So it's time to change. They give it a go with Andrea Pirlo. Obviously, it's normal. He's lacking experience. But I think if the whole club is committed to it, if they understand, okay, to take that pain right now and to allow him time to step by step modify the pieces that he needs to modify, they will see positive results. But obviously, Juventus is has a fan base globally that is always expecting to win. You know, it's always about the next game. Get us 3 points. You know, it's a very proud club and always with the high expectations. But they understood the situation. They give it a go now with Andrea. I really, really hope that they give him the confidence, they give him the belief to continue. And even if it takes another year or two, change takes some time.
It's a long time for fans.
Well, not only for fans, for Juventus as a club. How much time do you give them if you're in danger of missing out of Champions League? Juventus is a global club due in part because of the platform that it is provided to them in that sort of environment. We expect, all of us expect Juventus to be in Champions League. We expect them to be successful in Serie A. We expect them, with Cristiano Ronaldo and the personalities within that institution, within that club, to be very much out front of all of us playing in that sort of competition. And if you're going to jeopardize that because you're thinking, well, we got to give Andrea Pirlo some time. Mm. He's going to learn on the job. He needs experience. Is Juventus the sort of club that is willing to wait because we need to get Pirlo some experience? I don't think so. If this gets to the point to where you're missing Champions League, I don't care if this is about a transition or not. At some point, you got to make a decision that is best for the club, not best for Andrea Pirlo.
So, Gab, what will be breaking point? Say they lose to Napoli midweek.
I think, you know, in some ways there is an analogy with what we saw with Frank Lampard. In other words, finishing top four is non-negotiable. So if you get to the point where you say, all right, relationships are broken with Pirlo, he's lost it, his motivation's gone, we don't think that we have a chance of getting in the top four with him, or we think we have a better chance in the immediate between now and the end of the season of getting in the top four with somebody else, then I think they may well pull the trigger. But the overall movement, what Jurgen talked about before, and you're seeing this, other clubs are already making that transition, whether it's Milan, whether it's Roma, whether it's Atalanta, that's not going to change. And that's why I think it's highly unlikely, unless they really do a complete 180-degree turn, that they go back to somebody like Max Allegri. Not because he's a bad coach, he's an outstanding coach, but because it doesn't fit what they are trying to do. It doesn't fit the longer term project. And maybe it will be a case where Pirlo does the heavy lifting, brings in some young players, gives them playing time, and then somebody else finishes the job. But that commitment that they made, I mean, as I see it, I think it would be absolutely catastrophic to move away from it. Far more catastrophic than taking the hit for a year. As Jurgen said, no growth without pain.
Oh, that's a lot of negativity and agony. Let's go to ecstasy, shall we? Jurgen and your former club are going to win the league.
Hey!
Yeah, absolutely. This was a big day. This is almost a day to celebrate. I mean, you saw it, how they celebrated on the field after the final whistle. Players, coaches, they knew it. They knew it today because of AC Milan and Juventus leaving points, both of them, that this is a very, very special moment. And they got the job done at Bologna. They got it done very professionally, very focused, very efficient. It was not a great game. It was not a great performance by Inter by no means, but they got it done. And these 3 points really kind of give them now all the confidence in the world to go kind of the next 9 or 10 games to finish their job. And and to win after many, many years of waiting to winning the Scudetto again, thankfully.
And it was a nice goal, the only goal of the game from Lukaku, of course, adding to his tally this season, Jürgen, but lovely ball in from Bastoni as well.
No, I mean, the whole build-up to the goal was special. You know, coming through Ashley Young on the left side, passing it to Bastoni. And Bastoni as a left center back making that cross is just absolutely gorgeous to see. I mean, technically very, very well done by Bastoni. And the finishing shows you from Lukaku that he badly wanted this ball in the back of the net. You know, he put it in as a rebound. But so that shows his kind of determination, his drive, his willingness to go always there where it also could hurt. And that makes the huge difference this year with Lukaku and his striking partner up front, Lautaro Martinez. They have a blind understanding. They have fun. They're enjoying themselves. And even if it's not a real kind of an amazing victory, 1-0, the job was done, 3 points. And now they are 8 points clear. And they know that they're going to win this title.
Gab, famously last year when I asked you if it was over in the Premier League when Liverpool were 100 points ahead, you said, well, you never know. Aliens might come down and kidnap Klopp. Are we at that stage yet? 8 points clear for Inter with a game in hand?
It would probably take something of that magnitude, yes, for Inter not to win the title. But look, this is actually a very good analogy with Juve, right? Well, what do we see today? We saw Inter score and then going and then telling, look, they haven't played this way all season. I'm not saying that. But they scored first and they said, all right, Bologna, you have the ball. We'll hit on the break. Let's sit back and defend. And you know what? Maybe you can do that against Bologna and it works in Serie A, even though Bologna did have a couple chances. It's not going to work that way in Europe. In Europe, you have to impose yourself on the opposition. Conte knows that. Juve know that. People have come around to that idea, that old style way of playing. It just simply doesn't give results anymore. The cycle's turned. And so I think we would need to see, we saw it a different Inter for big chunks this year. We would need to see a different Inter next season, especially if they're going to do well in the Champions League.
Thank you very much, gents. Just a reminder, a couple of games, big ones as well, on Wednesday. Inter taking on Sassuolo, Inter with the chance then to extend their lead. But then what about this? Juventus against Napoli in Turin. Both those games live, 12:45 Eastern on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Bayern Munich stretched their lead to 7 points at the top of the table after defeating Leipzig by 1-0 in the top of the table clash. Goretzka with the only goal of the game. Jürgen, let's start with you. Of course, from a neutral's perspective, we were so desperate for a title race to go right down to the wire in Germany. This result pretty much eliminates that.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, we were all hoping that RB Leipzig kind of is able now, after a couple of years, step by step, catching up on Bayern Munich, getting better and better. And you can see how the players grew. The entire team grew over the last few years and became a real good team. And it's right now the only real title contender with Bayern Munich. But are they mature enough to really, in a decisive moment like this, pretty much 9 or 10 games left in the Bundesliga calendar, now to beat them and get close to them? They are not. And that was clear pretty much in the first half. You could see it in their body language. You could see it in their way they were playing it, that they didn't believe in it. And when you don't believe it, then the other team, especially with the experience of Bayern Munich, they smell that, and then they're going to use it. And sooner or later, they're not going to score on you. I mean, the goal by Leon Goretzka was an absolute beauty with the long ball from Kimmich into Thomas Müller. He sets it back to Goretzka. He finishes off. And that's enough for Bayern Munich in a moment where they're missing a couple of players. Almost their entire team is coming back from national team duty in midweek. So they just do their job professionally. Now they are 7 points clear, and the deal is done. I mean, it's especially on a psychological side, it's It's sad to see that Leipzig is not able to catch up with them, but it's the reality and Bayern Munich deserves it.
Jürgen, it's interesting you talk about Leipzig and the lack of belief that was evident. But you look at the Bayern Munich side, of course, there was no Lewandowski. You rightly mentioned that they were tired coming back from international duty. If you're a player in that Leipzig locker room ahead of kickoff, you're thinking, look, if we've got a chance against Bayern, today is the day. Why don't we see that belief?
Yeah, because if you don't have that history of beating a team at least, you know, every now and then, every second or third year in such a big clash, and they haven't done that, you know, in the last year. So they're just trying to kind of build a little bit of a record against Bayern Munich. So far, it's all negative for RB Leipzig. So it doesn't really matter if then the opponent is tired, if the opponent comes back from national team duty, whatever. When they face then these characters on the field, they sense it and then they kind of, they create their own little doubts, you know. And that's what you could see in the first half, that they were not able kind of to take control of the game and to create chances. Then second half, to give Leipzig a little bit of credit, they had a talk at halftime and said, you know, what the heck, you know, we are 1-0 down, so we have nothing to lose anymore. Let's give it a go. They came out far more energetic, far more with drive, and they have two or three chances. But even there, the chances were not really clinical. They were not really convinced of putting the ball into the back of the net, especially the chance that Danny Olmo had. You know, if it's a normal game, probably he puts it in. But if it's against Bayern Munich, you think a little bit too much. And that's what's happening to you when you face a team like Bayern. The mental side of it is so big. A lot of people underestimate that. And that's why they are where they are. You know, they're 7 points clear. They're going to win the next title, ninth title in a row, which makes it a little bit boring.
Jürgen, how did they deal without Lewandowski? What changes did we see?
Well, obviously, they made their change. They are creative. In that moment, when you don't have a clear kind of point of reference like Lewandowski, you know, you put a floater element in there. You try to kind of put the workload on other players. You cannot substitute Lewandowski. Mm. He's far too good. So you rely a little bit on Thomas Müller here and there, which he did because he laid off the goal beautifully. You hope that Sané maybe has a brilliant moment, or Coman and other players. But they have so much quality coming off the bench. So it's it doesn't really kind of hurt their belief, their confidence. They created that confidence over so many years or decades, I would almost say, that they know how to balance it out.
So the title decided today, and you could argue as well, the Champions League places as well. Wolfsburg with a 1-0 win, solidifying their place in third. Meanwhile, Eintracht Frankfurt beat Borussia Dortmund by 2-1, leaving Dortmund now 7 points off Frankfurt in fourth. Goodness me, Jürgen, this is a massive blow for Borussia Dortmund.
Yes, it is. I mean, this is not looking good for them, obviously, with all the discussions going on around Erling Haaland and his future. They are now in a situation where they're probably going to miss out on the Champions League. I mean, even playing Europa League is not bad, but obviously there's a huge financial difference to the Champions League. And that kind of just makes sure now for the next couple of weeks there will be so much discussion about if they have to sell a player. I mean, I don't know their financial balance sheet, but if they need money, then obviously some of the youngsters there are in speculation. And the biggest youngster is obviously Erling Haaland.
Gab, I know we haven't discussed this very much of late, but Erling Haaland maybe could leave Borussia Dortmund. The fact that they won't be playing in the Champions League next season, how big an influence will that be on where he'll be at the start of the next campaign?
Look, I think it certainly turns the screw on Borussia Dortmund a little bit, as Jürgen said. You know, they may need to sell a player, but that's fine. They have a lot of talented youngsters. I think the key thing to remember with Erling Haaland, as we see his agent Mino Raiola go on his roadshow from Barcelona to Madrid to London to Manchester, is that he has this clause where next summer, in the summer of 2022, he can leave for around about 75 million euros. That's what's been reported. Whereas this summer, the market sets the price. And the price this summer would be a lot higher. So while from the club's perspective, if they do take a hit, if they have to sell, it would make more sense to sell this summer where you can get more money for him. From his perspective, from his agent's perspective, you're far better off waiting until the summer of 2022. And, you know, as Jan Agafjordtoff told us on the Gavin Joy Show, if you need to go and spend a year outside the Champions League, you're 20 years of age, you can live with that. And it might be a price worth paying if it means that a year from now, you can get your pick. You've got an auction for your services, not just a financial one, but also you can really go and plan the next step of your career, wherever that is. That gives you a lot more power. Because tell you what, this summer, there's only going to be a couple clubs. If Borussia Dortmund really want 130, 150 million for him, there's only going to be a couple clubs that can even think about approaching that number.
Do you stay or go, Jürgen?
I really hope that he stays. I really hope for him, you know, to get another year, at least another year under his belt with Borussia Dortmund and keep on maturing. And I hope it also for the club, because it's a huge club. Obviously, we all, you know, suffered COVID-19, and I don't know how the consequences are for every individual club in the Bundesliga. But I really hope for the development also of that team that he stays. I mean, there's so many youngsters coming through the pipeline at Borussia Dortmund that can only get better. There's Sancho, there's obviously Giovanni Reina. You know, there's so many other ones that can, you know, they have a bright future ahead of them. And a centerpiece of that young Borussia Dortmund team is obviously Haaland. So I think for him, it doesn't hurt to stay at Borussia Dortmund and prove it another year, at least another year before leaving, if he wants to leave then. But I don't know, as I said, I don't know the financial situation at Dortmund.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
In Spain, Real Madrid moved up to second in the table. Asensio and Karim Benzema handing them a 2-0 victory. They are 3 points now off Atleti at the top. It's interesting, earlier in the show, Stevie said it's a coin flip between Real Madrid and Liverpool, looking ahead to those Champions League ties. Do you agree?
It is. And I think both of these teams, as the draw came out, they would have been, I think we can handle this. It's been a tough season for both of them. Up and down for both of them, inconsistent for both of them. And so you feel that Real Madrid is the sort of team that, on a good day, when you have Casemiro, Kroos, and Modric controlling the midfield, they can beat anybody in the world. And you have Karim Benzema as the guy who can score the big goal as well. The big question for Real Madrid is going to be defensively. What are they doing without Sergio Ramos? Eder Militao is not the guy. He has mistakes in him. Even today, against Eibar, there were moments in which you're saying, Eder, just clear the ball, please, right. Just get rid of it, don't even deal with it. As the game sort of got rainy and stormy and windy, all you wanted was Eder Militao, if you're a Real Madrid fan, just to clear the ball and not trying to play out of the back. He can be a problem, so you assume Varane and Nacho are going to play alongside each other. Does he go to a back three? Does he crowd the midfield once again, as he did against Atalanta, with a transition team like Liverpool? Those are questions that Zidane is going to have to answer, but Real Madrid have a real good chance simply because, at their very best, that midfield can control the game.
Who would you pick right now?
Real Madrid.
Really?
If Diogo Jota doesn't play for Liverpool, I'm picking Real Madrid.
I think he will play for Liverpool.
I'm going to pick Real Madrid still.
Right, still?
Yeah, I really think that midfield is superior to anything that Liverpool has to offer.
Gab?
I'm going to lean Liverpool simply because we saw against Atalanta, I'm not saying Atalanta are like Liverpool, but you know, we saw what it took for Real Madrid to win that game, which was, you know, in the first leg, there was the early sending off, the man advantage. I think the key is going to come to whoever imposes their way of playing on this team. But if Liverpool can play at a certain tempo, if Real Madrid can't slow things down and control the game with that midfield. And I think it's big that, you know, Kroos should be a little more rested for this game, Modric too. But I just think I would lean Liverpool to shade it simply because they can come out and I think they can rattle Real Madrid. But I mean, it's a coin flip. And by the way, two of the best goalkeepers in the world could well come down to that.
A very bad day for PSG. They lost against Lille by 1-0, meaning Lille now 3 points clear at the top of the table. Meanwhile, Neymar sent off two bookable offences for just being petulant, really. Neymar's got to be better than that, hasn't he?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're not a teenager.
No. What's the excuse now? Yeah, they're kicking you. Yes, that's you're Neymar. You're going to get kicked every once in a while, right? And the way that you like to play, you're going to attract some of that attention. So you got to expect it. The fact that you get yourself thrown out in the game in which it's first against second, it's you and Lille. This is where the title race is going to be played. This is perhaps where it's going to be decided. What do? You get yourself thrown out. What does that say to PSG? What does that say to PSG fans? What does that say to the people that paid so much money for you to be the leader of this team, to carry this team into winning things, into winning a title? It's not a good message to send to anybody, and certainly Neymar knows better than this. He should be more mature than this.
Is he ever going to change?
No, absolutely not. No, because it's too late now. If he was going to change, this would have happened years ago, and he just doesn't get the message. He really doesn't get it that he's got to be above all of this. That his importance to PSG is playing on the field and performance on the field and providing assists and scoring goals and carrying this team to win bigger and better things. Not this, not getting thrown out. It's not, as I mentioned before, it's not even challenges. If you get two yellow cards on bad challenges, you miss time a player, what have you, you say, okay, you can understand that. But on hitting somebody in the face, slapping somebody in the face, or pushing somebody else down because you're frustrated, because of frustration, because of a childish behavior, juvenile behavior, that's unacceptable.
Gab?
I completely agree. I mean, he was in a situation where obviously he was there training throughout the break. And look, if you're Pochettino, you're looking ahead. Obviously, you know, you got that big win against Lyon before the break, take some of the pressure off. Now, all you had to do was navigate this Lille game, and then you've got the big ones coming up against Bayern in the Champions League. Now, with what mentality do you go into those games? On the back of a defeat? On the back of more controversy? Yeah, they had no Marco Verratti today, which obviously didn't help. But really, they were all over the place. And Gaultier, I thought, completely out-coached them as well. And the whole Neymar fiasco simply makes things worse and destabilizes you further at a time when it's the last thing you need.
Gab, you mentioned Verratti out. Of course, won't feature either for the clash against Bayern Munich. Bayern favourites, PSG evens. Is that about right, even though there is no Lewandowski?
Yeah, I mean, what we saw. I mean, Eric Choupo-Moting can do his Lewandowski impression. I think proper real.
Oh no!
And they're confident. No. Maybe go that way. If we see what state of mind they're going to be in when they take the pitch, I think you would still say Bayern are the favorites.
I would as well, Ali. From what we saw today against Leipzig, they're just a much better oiled machine.
They're a machine. PSG are not a machine, and they're a little dysfunctional. And you don't see the sense of a team that knows exactly what they want to do on the field and how they're going to do these things on the field. Are they an attacking team? Are they a team that is going to absorb pressure? How do you do that against Bayern Munich? There is a disorganization to me in PSG that I think a team like Bayern Munich can exploit, and they can take full advantage of that, whether Lewandowski is there or not. Of course, you're better if Lewandowski's on the field. But even so, there's a level of confidence and a certainty to Bayern Munich right now that you don't see from PSG.
Well, just a reminder, for more reaction to what happened not only in France but right across the board, be sure to download the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which will drop on Monday.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I think we covered pretty much every league everywhere.
I hope
doing
so.
Everything today. Thank you very much for joining us. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra Time is next. I know Ali is with me in the studio. Hello. I have no idea who will be joining us. What an exciting lottery of guests.
Hey!
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Ali Moreno is here in the studio.
Do we know who's with us?
I won't know until we see. I can't remember who's with us.
Hey!
Oh, it's Stevie! Oh, and it was going to be Jules, but he got stuck at the Arsenal game, so we had to get Gab on.
Oh, there we go.
Woo!
Choupo-Moting is playing up top for us.
Thank you very much. Okay, here we go. If it wasn't for Haaland, oh, here we go. Good, we haven't mentioned him for a while. Will there be any club interested to work with Mino Raiola? The guy is going around Europe visiting clubs for his client and putting on a circus show disrespecting Dortmund. Mm. The million clubs spend on agents. Doesn't FIFA need to step in to control? Gab, I feel like this is for you.
So first of all, FIFA are stepping in to control. They've passed new legislation. With all sorts of things regulating agents, including who can get paid by who and what kind of deal, capping how much agents can earn on a single deal, and most of all having transparency where we find out who gets paid and what they get paid for. But guys, come on, nobody can be this naive, right? The big Erling Haaland roadshow where he goes around Europe from Barcelona to Madrid to London to Manchester, this suits Dortmund 1,000,000%. Mm. Because a year from now, he's got the release clause kicking in. If they want to sell him this summer, and they may have that option, then they're going to get a much higher price for him. They knew when he arrived that this is what they had signed up to do. They knew that Erling Haaland is represented by his dad, Alfie, who, by the way, Erling Haaland's dad, you know, he's not some bumpkin. He's a guy who was a professional footballer for many years. He chose Mino Raiola specifically for this reason. They want to see what business they can drum up. They know people want Erling Haaland, and they'll report back. And this suits everybody involved. Now, personally, I don't think he's going to move this summer. Not that you asked. But, Dortmund dealt with Raiola when they got him, and they knew that they're what they were getting.
Stevie, please answer this. Why does Tuchel continue to play Jorginho? Would you have taken him off before the half, given he was responsible for both yellow cards Thiago Silva received?
I'll be honest, I think Jorginho's done a decent job for Tuchel. I don't think Chelsea's problems have been getting the ball from back to front. You know, we used to complain that Jorginho was a guy that passed the ball sideways. I don't see him doing that under Tuchel. Yes, he made mistakes today. But listen, if you start taking players off because they've made a mistake, regardless of when it is in the game, then we're going to need five subs. So I think Jorginho's been okay, to be honest.
I know what it is. Mm. I know what it is.
What is it?
It's the I'm looking at Stevie, uh-huh. Behind Stevie. Uh-huh. It's the reflection of the light off the shield going onto the wood. I mean, think about it. Can you see it?
I see
it. Over his left shoulder.
So it's not that his cabinet is falling apart.
You're like thinking, right, is that like something's happened to his cabinet? But I think, no, it is. It's the light off the shield, uh-huh, onto the bookcase.
So the cabinet is not broken. It's not chipped.
Oh, that's good. I'm pleased I cracked that code. Okay.
All right, good.
Gab, would you have taken Jorginho off?
I mean, look, I just want to make a more general point about Jorginho, especially living here in England. It's like he's at the heart of everything bad that happens to Chelsea, right? He's missed, I think, two penalties, but that every time he steps to take a penalty, there's some Muppet commentator be like, oh, kind of surprising, Jorginho taking the penalty. The guy has played regularly under three different managers, under Sarri, under Lampard, and now under Thomas Tuchel. he cannot be the source of everything that ails Chelsea. He played a lot during this last run when they weren't conceding. Nobody thinks that, you know, he's Brian Robson, Paul Pogba, and Pep Guardiola rolled into one.
Ooh.
But he obviously can pass the ball and obviously does things that, that Tuchel likes.
Ali, do you still think Atleti will
it
win?
It would be, yeah. That'd be pretty useful.
Do you think Atleti will win the title if they win tomorrow against Sevilla? Or if they lose that, will their chances be very slim considering Barca and Real Madrid have been doing well?
That's a lot of ifs there. Atletico Madrid still have the points.
Yes.
Barcelona and Real Madrid still catching up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if, as the question states, they beat Sevilla, that's one big obstacle that they get rid of. If they beat Sevilla, yes, you still have to pick Atletico Madrid as the favorites to win it, because once again, let me state this, they have the points. Barcelona and Real Madrid do not.
ESPN analysts, why can't I talk? ESPN analysts still backing Pochettino against our Norwegian Magnifico Ole. Pochettino having a bad time at PSG today, losing Stevie. Ole, of course, thriving with Manchester United. Were you wrong?
I beg your pardon. Pochettino's been in there 2 seconds, and he's inherited a team that's got too many of the players. I've got too much to say off the field, and haven't been doing it enough on the field. So listen, he inherited a team that's expected to win their league, but he also inherited some problems. And they don't just go away overnight just because you change the manager. They've got personnel problems on the field that have to be changed. They need a couple of players, and they don't have to be so-called Galacticos. They just need to be a couple of players that will settle things down, will organise, and certainly from a professional point of view, be able to get a hold of the likes of Neymar and try and curb his nonsense that so far nobody's been able to do.
You know, when we ask Stevie a tricky question, mm-hmm. there's a deep breath,
uh-huh.
a very vivid pause. This is, I feel, going to trigger that as well.
Uh-huh.
Stevie, Jordi Alba is thriving in Barca's new formation. In your time as a player, was there ever a big system formation change which benefited your playing style?
No, but there was a big system change that killed me.
the pass back.
I was struggling. I'd lost a couple of yards in my legs, and we started playing 3-5-2. Now, in a 3-5-2, the toughest job is to be the two wide guys, because when you go forward, you have to be forward. And when you're defending, you have to defend. So you are getting up and down that line for fun. Now, when you're 25, it's a piece of cake. But when you're 33, the age I was, it's a little taxing on the legs and the lungs.
Ali, do players confront apparent wrong tactics of coaches, and have you ever done it?
Well, I don't think you confront the coach right then and there. You try to problem solve on the field. And what I have been a part of in the past is we know it's not working, and maybe it may be different than whatever we were told to do, but we can feel it that it's not working. They're passing all over us. They're killing us. So, hey, no, you come inside. You tuck in here. You come over here. You get behind the ball. We're not doing this. We're not going to go chase over there. This high pressure is not working for us. And you try to problem solve.
Right.
Then you go into halftime, and then you get yelled at because you didn't do whatever you were asked to do, and then that's when the back and forth starts. It's like, it's not working, dude. Whatever you asked us to do, it's not working. And we're out there trying to problem solve, because whatever issues you brought up in this new formation that we're trying to somehow spin out there on the field, it's not working for us. It doesn't match the personnel that is out there.
Stevie, how did you deal with it at the Revs if any of the players suggested tactical changes?
Well, one, they didn't. Primarily because they knew if they did, then I would have a few things to say to them. Listen, unfortunately, when things go wrong, the majority of it is actually down to the players. Because sometimes as a coach, it doesn't matter what system you play, depending on what players you have, and if you know, regardless of how you play, it ain't going to change anything, then try sort that one out.
here's the thing, though. And different than other sports. There are no timeouts in soccer. There is no like, hey guys, hey, let's gather and come together. Now we're really gonna reshuffle the deck and trying to work things out. No. It's on the go, and so you have to make decisions on the go. And when you have players that are able to do that, you usually have better teams. But when you have players that have difficulties finding that flexibility and making decisions on the go, that's when you struggle.
Stevie, didn't you used to have players' parents suggesting tactical changes to you?
What?
I have to tell you, well, yeah, I did with a youth team I used to coach all the time. But I never, ever thought I would ever, in a professional situation, have a parent suggesting that I play the son in a different position. That happened to me at the Revs. One of the players' fathers came to me pre-season when we were walking through the hotel lobby. Said, oh, how you doing? I was like, yeah, how nice. And he went, have you ever thought of trying so-and-so on the left? And I'm like, ah, bye. Off I went. Couldn't believe it.
Final question, Stevie. Do coaches train players on tactical fouls during team training? A good example would be Manchester City's Fernandinho and how he commits tactical fouls to break up play.
No, you don't train them. You just have a word and basically say, look, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, and it's usually your midfield players, because your tactical fouls generally are to stop the opposition getting anywhere near your back four. So generally it's your midfielders. So you kind of have to, you talk to them and say, look, you've got to work out here. If this guy gets through, whoever it may be you're playing against, then if we're in trouble, then you maybe have to just bite the bullet and take a yellow and bring them down. And then it's up to them on the field of play to understand that situation. But yes, you would speak to them about it. But at the end of the day, it's up to them to have the sense and to be able to sum up the situation where it needs to be done.
That's it. We're done. Thank you very much for all your tweets.
It's been a full day.
It has been a full day. There's a lot of games today. And it continues tomorrow.
Yay!
We will be here tomorrow to once again answer your tweets and, of course, break down all the big stories. Be sure to join us.